సరహస్యో ధనుర్వేద సవి సర్గోపసంయ అస్త్రగామశభవత శిక్షితో యద్ అనుగ్రహాత్. ఇట్ వాజ్ బై ద్రోణాచార్యస్ మర్సీ దట్ యు లెర్న్ ద మిలిటరీ ఆర్ట్ ఆఫ్ థ్రోయింగ్ యారోస్ అండ్ ద కాన్ఫిడెన్షియల్ ఆర్ట్ ఆఫ్ కంట్రోలింగ్ వెపన్స్. So just to summarize this chapter so far, so we are at the end of the Kurukshetra war. Duryodhan is lying injured, his spine broken by the mace of Bhima, and at that time Ashwatthama approaches him and he promises Duryodhan that I can wipe out the Pandavas for you. He then goes to the camp of the Pandavas at night. Mind you, this is against the Vedic laws of war. In the Vedic times, the war was happening during the day, and at the night, there was a total understanding that both parties would then rest and there would be no attacks. In fact, it is said that sometimes the members of both parties would actually mingle at night in a friendly manner. This was the way of war in the Vedic times. And in the daytime, again, there would be fierce enemies. But in this case, Ashwatthama went and attacked the camp of the Pandavas in the middle of the night when everybody was fast asleep. First of all, he went and he kicked Dhrishtadyumna. Dhrishtadyumna was the commander of the Pandava army, and he was the one who actually killed his father, Ashwatthama's father, Dronacharya. So first of all, he woke him up, and before he was fully awake, he strangled him. Again, this is completely against the rules of Vedic warfare. One must not attack a person when he doesn't have a weapon. Dhrishtadyumna was sleeping and he had no weapons around him, yet he was strangled. He then went looking for the Pandavas, because that was his promise. He wanted to take the heads of the Pandavas back to Duryodhan. But as it happened, by Krishna's arrangement, Krishna had taken the five Pandavas out of the camp that night by some excuse. So Ashwatthama could not find the Pandavas, and his anger, he actually slaughtered five sons of Draupadi. These are teenage boys, and he cut their heads off. He then went to Duryodhan and presented these heads to Duryodhan, thinking that his master will be very, very happy with him. Duryodhan, he just felt the heads of these five heads. And just by squeezing them gently, he at once realized that these heads are not the Pandava heads, because the Pandavas are very, very strong personalities and these heads were soft. So he at once realized that these heads were those of the children of Pandavas. So rather than being happy with Ashwatthama, he was really, really annoyed. He was not happy at all, because Duryodhan realized that all the Kauravas have been lost. And now, by killing these five boys, Ashwatthama has actually cut off, for now, the line of the Kurus. So he was very, very upset. So then, when the Pandavas returned to their camp, of course they were distraught with all the carnage, because apart from the sons of Draupadi, a lot of other Pandava members were also killed at the time. And the Draupadi was, of course, distraught. She was really, really upset. So at that point, Arjuna promises her that I'm going to get that culprit. And he calls him Brahma Bandhu. Arjuna calls Ashwatthama Brahma Bandhu. So Ashwatthama was a son of Dronacharya, who was a Brahmana. But he still calls him Brahma Bandhu, meaning that a Brahmana And Prabhupada translates that, how I wrote it down here. Degraded Brahmana. Prabhupada translates that Brahma Bandhu as degraded Brahmana. So there's Dvija Bandhu, Brahma Bandhu, meaning the same thing, which means a person born in a Brahmana family, but not acting as a Brahmana or not qualified as a Brahmana. So that's a Dvija Bandhu. So he said, I'm going to get that Dvija Bandhu, that the Brahma Bandhu. I'm going to chop his head off and bring his head to you. And then after you have cremated your five sons, you can stand on his head and then take your bath. This was his promise. So Arjuna then gets on to his chariot with a whole host of very, very powerful weapons. And he starts chasing Aswatthama. So Aswatthama sees from a distance that Arjuna is coming for me. So he gets on his chariot and he starts to ride really fast, trying to get away from Arjuna. This went on for a long time, to a point where the horses of Aswatthama got very tired. At that point, the chariot just wouldn't move forward. And now he realized that Arjuna is just about to catch up with me. And the only thing he could think of was, I must do anything in my power to stop this. So he then releases the Brahmastra weapon, which is the atomic weapon, which is the most powerful weapon. It is said that it was like taking a machine gun to kill a mosquito. This is the kind of action he's taking. So one person, Arjuna, is approaching him, and to stop him, he's actually using the Brahmastra completely over the top. The other thing was that he knew the art of throwing the Brahmastra, but he did not know how to withdraw it. So as Prabhupada explained in the purport, this science, the military science in those days, where they were controlling the weapons by mantras. So they were taught so expertly that they could release it, control it as they wanted, and also at their wish, at their whim, even withdraw it. But Aswatthama didn't have that knowledge yet, and he'd release that Brahmastra. So Arjun sees this amazing glare and heat appearing out of nowhere. He then approaches Krishna. Now here's a strange thing. Here's a Brahmastra, the deadliest weapon in the whole world, approaching you at high speed, right? What would I do if I was in that position? I would run to Krishna and say, please help, help, right? No, what does Arjuna do? He starts praising Krishna. He offers prayers, right? Some beautiful prayers, and I will just weave them out. This is text 22 to 25, Arjuna's offering. So Arjuna is saying to Krishna, O my Lord Sri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only. 25. So these are not short prayers, these are long prayers, right? You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to the material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. And it still goes on. And yet, though you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation characterized by religion and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. Thus, you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are constantly wrapped in meditation upon you. So imagine that he is in danger, the biggest danger you can think of, and yet he finds time to pray and praise Krishna. So this reminded me of one time listening to a lecture, I forgot who it was, and he mentioned to us that a prayer should consist of four components. The first component is praise. Second, gratitude. Third, begging for forgiveness. And fourth, ask for benediction. Yeah, you can ask for benediction, but that comes at the end. First, you praise the Supreme Lord. Second, you thank Him for whatever He's given us so far, and the Lord's gift, everything we have is the Lord's gift. So we thank Him for that. Then we beg forgiveness for any mistakes that we have made. And everybody, human nature, we are all prone to making mistakes. So we beg for forgiveness. And then finally, if you wish, you can then ask for a benediction, a worthwhile benediction. What happens to us? As soon as we approach the altar, our shopping list comes out, doesn't it? Yeah? Oh Lord, give me a job with a six-figure salary and a mansion by the sea. Jaya Jagadish Hare. So this is, we forget about praise, we forget about asking for forgiveness, everything else goes out of the window. Straight away we jump to our shopping list. Prabhupada says, Krishna is not your order provider, order fulfiller. But this is a good lesson to learn, that when we approach the Lord, we must offer Him praise, prayers, and ask for forgiveness for us, and then continue what we want to do. So, Arjuna has asked Krishna, what is all this? What's this glare about? And Krishna says, straight away, Krishna knows this is the weapon. He says to Arjuna that Aswatthama has released his weapon. The problem is he doesn't know how to withdraw it. So the only way that you have now is to release your Brahmastra, and then both will be combined, and then you can withdraw both simultaneously. So Arjuna does that. He releases his weapon, controls both the weapons, and withdraws them. Then he chases after Aswatthama, who was at that time not protected, and he grabs him, ties him up with ropes. And at that point, Krishna is saying to Arjuna, do not spare this culprit. Again, Krishna calls him Brahmabandhu at that point again. Do not spare him. So Krishna calls him Brahmabandhu, Dvijabandhu. Why? To point out to Arjuna that you may think he's a Brahmana, but I'm telling you he's not a Brahmana. He's a Brahmabandhu. He is not following the rules of the Brahmanas. Yesterday, Mataji, Vrajabhumi Mataji were talking about the qualities of a Brahmana. And she quoted the verse 1842, I believe, from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, where the qualities of a Brahmana is described. Shama dama tapa shosham kshanti arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. So first quality is peacefulness. Peacefulness. A Brahmana is supposed to be peaceful. Now, was Aswatthama peaceful? Right. The acts that he committed at the camp at night at Pandava's camp was just atrocious. It's nothing to do with a Brahmana. So immediately, forget about the rest of the qualities. He fails on the first hurdle. So he's not a Brahmana. And in another way, he's not even a Kshatriya if you think about it. Because a Kshatriya would not, again, do what he did. Not break the rules of warfare. So he was neither a Kshatriya nor was he a Brahmana. So Krishna was saying to Arjuna, go and now don't spare him. Just kill him. But Arjuna, being a Vaishnava, he was kind-hearted. So actually Prabhupada in that purport explains that although Krishna was instructing Arjuna to kill Aswatthama, it was in a way a test. Krishna was testing Arjuna, right? And Arjuna didn't fail the test. Arjuna then dragged him to the camp and brought him in front of Draupadi and left the decision onto Draupadi. Now this particular text, 44, is about this reaction, 43, 44, about the reaction of Draupadi. Amazing reaction. Draupadi's reaction shows not only the nature of a woman, but a nature of a kind, forgiving, and considerate Vaishnava. Imagine, she's pleading to save the life of a person who has slaughtered her five children. Just think about that. She's pleading, Arjuna, don't kill him. And this is the person who has killed five of his of her sons. To lose a child for a parent must be one of the most frightening, most damaging things that can happen, right? And to lose five of them, and that too, to a brutal murder. You know, when a child is sick, sometimes a child has got some disease and then the child dies as a result of that disease. Yeah, it's still hurtful, very painful, but still you can reconcile with it. But when a child is murdered, it's very difficult to reconcile with that. And in this case, five young children in their prime were just slaughtered in their sleep. And yet, Draupadi is showing such amazing kindness. So, she finds gratitude in the heart. So the acharyas explain that gratitude is a Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshma Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gonita ki jai, Jagat Guru Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So this is the point here in this verse is gratitude. So acharyas explain that gratitude is the nature of a noble soul. One must be always grateful for something that anybody's done for us. It is said that whenever somebody does something for us, physically, mentally, especially spiritually, one must forever remain grateful to that person. Never forget that deed that he has done for you. That person may turn inimical towards you. That person may even fall down from his own path. No matter what, but one should never forget the debt. Never forget the help that person gave us. Any favor that anyone does must never be forgotten. Conversely, if ever somebody harms us, somebody hurts us, mentally, physically, somebody says something rude to us, that, acharyas say, we should immediately forget. Totally forget. Put it out of your mind. Do not hold it. Holding a grudge is very harmful. Holding a grudge harms us, not anybody else. It is said that holding a grudge is like holding a red-hot coal in your hand. It does nothing to the other person. He's done what he's done to you and he's moved on. But you're holding that coal and you're burning yourself. So this is something that we must all try and learn. Just to deal with it, it is explained that one should, whatever, if something happens to you which is unfavorable as from your point of view, and somebody does something, says to you something, somebody does something to you, then we are supposed to understand that this has happened because it was due to happen to me, because of my action in some distant past, something that I have done has brought on this reaction onto me. And this person who is actually doing it to me, he is only an instrument. So that way you don't hold a personal grudge against that person. You realize that this is a plan of a bigger scheme. And you then move on with that. Right? Easier said than done, of course. But this is something that this verse tries to teach us. That Dronacharya was there. He did everything in his powers to destroy the Pandavas. And yet, because the fact that he had taught, he was the guru of Arjuna and he had taught the art of military science to Arjuna, Draupadi is reminding him that do not forget this debt. Whatever he's doing to you, doesn't matter. But do not forget his debt to you. So, and also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shikshastrakam, and text 3 reminds us our position. A devotee should be trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishuna. So lower than a blade of grass, more humbler than a blade of grass, and more tolerant than a tree. So His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Guru Maharaj explains in, sometimes in his lectures about being more humble than a blade of grass. So a blade of grass, when somebody steps on it, does not protest. But when that person passes over, that blade of grass rises up again. So Bhakti Charu Maharaj says the devotee should be in a position where he should just remain down, not even rise up again. So that is humbler than the blade of grass. That's how humble we're supposed to be. So now imagine, if we are in that state, really speaking, and again, it's easier said than done, it's difficult to remain in that position. But if you are in this position, how can anything hurt you? How can anything anybody does or anybody says, how can it hurt you? It cannot. It's such a good formula. If we were able to, just we were able to imbibe it. You know, we're all conditioned, we all have so much baggage, and that's why it's very difficult. But to try and get to this standard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has set, to become so humble, that nothing affects you. There must be a very beautiful state of mind. That nothing anybody says, nothing anybody does affects you. Such must be such a peaceful state of mind. And that is why this verse that says that a person in that state can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Because if you're in that peaceful state where nothing is affecting you, then all you can focus your mind purely on the name of the Lord. So this is how we're supposed to take messages from these wonderful verses and learn from them. Arjuna was similarly kind. He was very, very thoughtful as well, because when he was fighting this war valiantly under the instruction of Krishna, but as we know right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was reluctant because his Vaishnava character was coming out and he didn't want to fight. But due to the instructions of Krishna, he's willing to then take the fight. So internally, due to Vaishnava nature, he was willing to forgive anything. He was willing to forgive that all these people, all these his teachers, his grandfathers, his cousins, everybody was lined up against him and battle, willing to finish him off. He was willing to forgive that. So again, the lesson here is that anything that is happening to us personally, we should be completely ready to forgive and forget. But when it comes to taking instruction, when there is instruction from Krishna, and when there is truth to be upheld, when dharma is at danger, then you don't forgive. So here, Arjuna was fighting the war purely because Krishna explained to him that this is the duty, and a duty of a kshatriya is to fight against adharma. So whereas Arjuna was willing to forgive them because he was thinking from his personal point of view, when he came to the overall point of view, from Krishna's instructions, he then got ready to fight. But in this verse, for Draupadi, Draupadi didn't have that consideration. Draupadi wasn't a fighter in the war. So she had no reason to go against her own nature, which was to be kind. She had a heart of a kind mother. So here we can now, Draupadi's reaction to this whole situation can be taken in two ways. So firstly, one would probably say, if you look at it from just a logical point of view, one would maybe criticize it to say that actually justice wasn't done. The due justice wasn't done because of the crime that Aswadhama committed. He should be punished. But because of Draupadi's kind heart, justice was prevented from happening. So that it could be looked seen from one point of view like that, right? But on the other level, it can be glorified because this action, it revealed such an exalted, motherly, loving nature in Draupadi. Right? So utterly grateful she was. So scripture gives us these wonderful lessons from different directions, different angles. So you can look at it from both angles and then take a lesson each way, right? It's just beautiful how scriptures are teaching us these wonderful. So by learning these lessons, we can learn to become cultured Vaishnavas, hopefully. So when I was reading this particular section of this chapter, something went through my mind, and I thought, what did the five sons of Draupadi do? They must have done something to deserve this kind of death. So that thought was going in my mind, and I was thinking, there must be a story, because there's always some linking story of how, what was the past, why, who were they before, and how did they end up in this situation. I couldn't find, unless somebody knows, I couldn't find any reference. Prabhuji, you know?
Kati Chandra Prabhu was saying, the five sons of Draupadi, they made offenses to Lord Shiva in the previous life.
Okay.
So for that reason, they were destined to be...
They were cursed, okay.
They were cursed like that.
Okay, so offenses they committed in the past life to Lord Shiva got them the curse to come to the end of this life and suffer such a brutal death. So that's fine. But I, because I couldn't find any reference myself, I was probably thinking that the one way to look at it, it would be to say that this was perhaps a pastime arranged by Krishna to show up the such a grateful nature, such motherly nature of Draupadi. Right? And then if they were part of the pastime that Krishna has arranged, then there's no question of karma. Because when you're part of Krishna's plans, then you are not under the law of karma, you are under the internal potency of Lord Krishna. So this is what I was thinking. But of course, Kartik Chandra is very learned. He's obviously got that fact from somewhere. So quickly, in the purport, we're coming up to 8:30. Purport, Prabhupada mentions Maharaj Dasharatha. He could control the weapons, and he could hit his target just by hearing the sound. And in fact, I was thinking that is the very ability that got him in trouble, didn't it? Because he heard that sound behind the bushes, and he thought it was a deer, and he shot his arrow, and it was accurate. And then, of course, he heard a cry of a human being. And it was Shravana. It was a Brahmana boy who was looking after his elderly blind parents. I picture that thing from my childhood days, where he was holding a stick, two baskets at each end, and he used to carry his parents. He was taking them on a pilgrimage like that. And he has stopped to get some water for them. And that picture of water, when he's filling from the pond, you can imagine the sound, the glug glug sound it makes. It sounded like a deer was drinking water. So very similar sound. And of course, Lord Dasharatha killed him. And the parents then cursed him to also die in the viraha of his son. And Dasharatha sort of went through that. And he left his body whilst he was missing Lord Ram so dearly. So there's a few more things here, but we've hit 8:30. I'd like to open the floor for any comments, questions. Probably I'll go for...